Good afternoon and welcome back. Good to see everybody here. We appreciate your presence. Hope you'll take out a Bible and follow along. For those who were here this morning, you know that we began talking about this idea of marriage, recognizing that marriage is under attack from multiple sides and in multiple ways. The one that seems to be most on people's minds right now is the homosexual movement to declare homosexual relationships as being a viable form of marriage. And that is simply an attack on marriage. But what you need to understand, what we need to understand, is that's not the only attack on marriage. And that while it may be that there is some movement, that there is some force trying to change the definition of marriage, trying to undermine the necessity and the beautifulness and the holiness of marriage, we ought to fight back. And so I want to talk about us doing our part and what we can do. And we ought to recognize a limitation. We cannot fix this country. That's not up to me, and that's not up to you. We can do our part, and we can be as much of a positive influence as we can. But this is not about, let's go and create an uprising and overtake Washington and we will change the laws by force. That's not what this is about. But there are things that I believe God expects from us and things that we ought to do. And in order to fight to save marriage, I think the first thing we need to recognize is we must not yield on the definition. I know that we are going to be ridiculed. We are going to be have many insults cast upon us because we believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. We will be accused of being bigoted and small-minded, but we must not change the definition. And when Jesus is talking about marriage in Matthew chapter 19, he describes as how God made it. This was part of why we have to fight for it, because it's His creation, His design. We are fighting for Him. Jesus says, He answered them, "Have you not read that He created them from the beginning, made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.'" God has spoken very clearly about what it takes to make a marriage. It takes a male and a female. That's what God created. We talked about this morning that there was a problem, and God's solution was marriage. But it wasn't just marriage. God's solution was to create women. A woman was part of God's solution. We can't change that. God could have made man, but He didn't. He made a woman as man's perfect match. So I can't yield on the definition. I just can't do it. So that means I cannot acknowledge their relationship. I can acknowledge a homosexual without any problem. They exist. I can be nice to them. I should be nice to them. I can be loving to them. I should be loving to them. I can serve them. I should serve them. But I cannot acknowledge the relationship. So I'm not going to go to one of their weddings. I'm not going to perform one of their weddings. I won't do either one. I can't change the definition of marriage. I won't call them the other one's husband or wife, and I don't even know which one to do. In fact, understand the nature of this attack. As soon as this became law, California started to say, we got to get husband and wife off the record books. Why? Because they don't know who's what. They are changing the definition, and they don't seem to understand that. I don't get that. But do you see the article just the yesterday? I saw it yesterday on MSN. They were touting this great billboard over in Tennessee, I think it is, that said, you know, we no longer accept that we could sell our daughters for 3 goats and a cow. We've already changed the definition of marriage. Like, you don't understand what it means to change the definition of marriage. That's not anything to do with the definition of marriage. Changing husband and wife is the definition of marriage. That was how you enter into it. Have you considered the Bible doesn't tell us how to enter into marriage? I'm not suggesting that 3 goats and a cow is a great system. In fact, I really don't think that's a great system at all. But God hasn't told us how to do it. He hasn't told us whether it needs to be in a field or whether it needs to be in a church building. He hasn't told us whether there needs to be an exchanging of vows or whether there needs to be a preacher or whether there needs to be a signing of some document. He hasn't gone into all that stuff. That stuff is for us to decide. But what makes up a marriage, He has decided. And we don't have the right to change that. So yes, I will be kind, I will be compassionate, but I cannot acknowledge the relationship. We can't yield on the definition. And don't stop there. We cannot yield on the sanctity of marriage then. And this goes so much more than just on homosexual marriage. This is on marriage itself. This is on what God has created. So we looked at Hebrews 13 and verse 4. Go back to it and consider this passage once more. I want you to consider that if it's in here, there was a reason for it being in here. And I submit that it's not just for our time. The Hebrew author writes, marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled, for fornicators and adulterers God will judge. I believe that there was reason for that being written then just as much as now. Yes, we need to hear it, we need to understand it, we need to apply it. But we're not the only ones dealing with issues on marriage. It was already an existing issue. And this was the response. We hold it in honor, and we keep the marriage bed undefiled. And we must not yield on such things. So, we ought to get upset. We ought to be offended. We ought not take the world's perspective and assume premarital sex. That's assumed today. I mean, on television, that's like the great victory, right? The great victory is this person likes this person, and there's been all this conflict that's been keeping them apart. And then finally when they come together, it's not about marriage. It's never about they come together and they got married. It's about they finally came together and they had sexual relationships. Victory, yay, we finally have our resolution. We should be upset about that, not rejoicing that they finally got together. We should not accept that it is okay to live together before we get married, because we're supposed to be honoring marriage. And that is not honoring marriage, that is undermining it. We should not accept adultery, and that's really obvious. The point is, marriage needs to remain special. It needs to be treated as special. The relationship a husband and wife can have is unlike any other. We need to talk about it that way, and we need to treat it that way. Yes, just as I said we should be nice towards a homosexual person, so also should we be nice towards somebody who has lived in adultery, somebody who is living in a marriage that they're not allowed to be in. Consider Jesus in the example in John chapter 4. Jesus is with the woman on the well. Woman on the well. Yeah, she was balancing. The woman at the well. And we find out about her that she's a sinner. She's had multiple husbands. The person she has now isn't her husband at all. But notice Jesus doesn't acknowledge their relationships. Jesus doesn't say, well, that's okay. And she certainly doesn't get the idea that it's okay, because she starts changing the subject and recognizing he's a prophet right away. But Jesus isn't mean to her. Jesus still teaches her and shows her respect. Shows her respect. They couldn't understand that. They're his disciples. She's a woman. They couldn't understand that he would show her respect. She's a Samaritan woman. That's as low as you can get as far as they're concerned. He's still showing her respect, talking to her, teaching her, treating her like an adult. But that doesn't mean he's acknowledging her relationship as right. In John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11, there's this woman that is brought before Jesus who is been caught in the very act of adultery. Is there any point in there where Jesus says, it's okay, that wasn't a big deal? Jesus still treats her kindly. Jesus still treats her with respect as well. He doesn't judge her and condemn her, but he also tells her, go and sin no more. A recognition that it's sinful. And so we must not yield on the sanctity of marriage. That does not mean that we should be cruel and unkind to other people. But really the point that I wanted to get to, the practical things that we should do, and this is primarily towards husbands and wives, save your own marriage. Actually, I suppose that technically is only for husbands and wives. I don't know how anybody else could save their own marriage if they're not married. But have you ever heard that accusation that says, how can you accuse others or judge others for them getting married when there's such a high divorce rate? You know what? They're right. On what ground do we get to say that we're standing up for marriage when we ourselves are attacking it? They're right. And what we got to do is stop doing that. If we're going to stand for marriage, stand for marriage. Not one issue on marriage, but the entirety of marriage. the stand on, so we need to fight against divorce within our own families. That should not be something that is so prevalent within the church, so prevalent within this world. Jesus has taught about marriage and divorce. And he did not teach that divorce was okay. He taught that divorce leads to sin. So I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. Now you could look at Matthew 5 and verse 32, and that also includes the exception clause, but it doesn't everywhere. We ought not focus too much on the exception clause, because really what it's about is what he said in verse 6. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. When we allow divorce, when we accept divorce, when we think divorce is okay, we are working against God's work. He's the one who joins together. Now I recognize that there are times when people, even Christians, find themselves in a situation where divorce is the correct course of action, but it is the course of action they take for good reason. When their spouse has been unfaithful on multiple occasions, I understand where that's coming from. There are exceptions to this, but we shouldn't focus on the exceptions. The rule is this: God has joined together, let no man separate. Treat marriage like it is a bond made by God. Treat marriage like it is a lasting bond. We now have divorce, drive-through divorce? You can just drive up, you can get divorced. Divorce is so incredibly easy these days. That's pretty shameful. Remember how I said I wouldn't go to a homosexual wedding? It applies here too. Be consistent. What if somebody's getting married that has no right to get married? Jesus has just expressed that. Jesus has said if somebody gets divorced for some other cause other than sexual immorality and they marry someone else, that relationship is sin. That is adultery, is what he's just said. So, you know somebody, maybe there's somebody you're related to. They are getting married and you know they have no right to get married. Do you go to that wedding? My answer is the same as what I said before. I will not perform that wedding. And I won't go either. And I won't acknowledge the relationship later. Instead, I will proclaim, I've had to do this. This is not right. Now, that will not make you popular. In Mark chapter 6, verses 17 through 18, what we find is that's exactly what John the Baptist had been doing. So it says, for Herod himself had sent and had John arrested and bound in prison on account of Herodias, the wife of his brother Philip, because he had married her. So she had been married to Philip. Now Herod has married her. Well, we've seen what Jesus said about that. That's an adulterous relationship. So John had been saying to Herod, it is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. And so here he is not acknowledging that relationship, instead declaring it, that's not allowed. That's not lawful. That's not right. That didn't make him popular. He got arrested. I recognize it won't make us popular, but you want to fight back and save marriage? Don't acknowledge fake marriages. Stand against them. But ultimately, uphold God's structure for your marriage. Marriage is by God's design. He created it. He designed it. You want to save marriage? Start with your own. Be a good husband. Be a good wife. Not what the world thinks is a good husband or what the world thinks is a good wife, but follow God's plan. Do you believe it'll work? Then follow it. So what that means is we need godly husbands. We need husbands that are loving, husbands that are leaders, husbands that are sacrificing, husbands that are understanding. Let's go back to Ephesians chapter 5 and get some of these in here. In verse 25, it says, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present him to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. And so here, as Jesus sacrificed himself for the church, the husband is a sacrificing husband. He is, yes, he is a leader, but he's also supposed to be very focused on love. 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, it commands husbands to live with their wives in an understanding way. This is God's design. This is God's command. You want to save marriage, don't just look at all the rules and all the things we have no control over. Look at your own marriage and your own behavior and live like a good husband, a godly husband. Wives, you get instructions too. We need godly wives. We need wives that are submissive, that are at the same time strong and brave. We need wives that are loving, wives that are hard workers, wives that are respectful. Consider 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. I want to look at that idea of wives that are strong and brave. For some reason, people get the idea that Christianity teaches that we need weak women. I think that it's quite the opposite. We need women that have enough strength to overcome themselves. It is very hard to submit. Very hard. It takes strength to do it. It takes courage to trust someone else. So in 1 Peter 3 and verse 1 says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any one of them are disobedient to the world, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing the gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in the former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. But as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children, if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. Did you see that there was some cause for fear in those circumstances? But he says Sarah didn't have that. She didn't let her fear dictate her behavior. So we need women that are submissive, yes. But we need them that are strong and brave and courageous. They need to be loving. They need to be hard workers. They need to be respectful. Do we believe God's structure or not? The world has made the accusation of hypocrisy. Let's put an end to it. But we're going to do something else. We're going to test our faith and we're going to prove God right. So the world thinks anybody can get married. And the world thinks any marriage arrangement can work as far as what the roles of the husbands or the wives are. What we read this morning in Genesis chapter 2 was that there was a problem. And God created a solution, and that was a man and a woman. And he created the way that these man and woman were to act, clinging together, becoming one flesh. Going throughout the rest of the scripture, we see the husband as the head of the wife. We see the wife being submissive. We see the command for both of them to love one another. And we go on and on and on. But this was God's solution to the problem. Do you suppose there's any better solution in the world? My faith says there can't be. God's solution must be the best solution. So we want to prove to the world that God's way is the best way. Live it, and it'll show. Let us live as good husbands and good wives and watch as the world's idea of marriage crumbles around them. And as they cannot figure out what's going on and why things are going wrong, and they look to families that are staying together and are happy and blessed, let them see the wisdom of God through us. Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? Ephesians chapter 3, isn't that what we're supposed to be doing to all the world and even to the spiritual beings? Where it says, so that the manifold wisdom of God might now be made known through the church to the rulers and the authorities in the heavenly places. Through this church, through our behavior, aren't we supposed to declare God's great wisdom? Well, then let's do that. Let's be better husbands. Let's be better wives. That's how we fight back. We prove the world wrong by showing God right. May it be that the people of the world can see husbands that lead with undeniable love. And may the world see women that submit and are undeniably honored and exalted and praised by their husband. Perhaps it's not such a good thing for us to refer to the old ball and chain. Perhaps it's not such a good thing for us to talk about marriage in derogatory terms, but instead to honor it. For God has commanded that. Keep something in mind. When you work at home, and I don't mean by that you don't have a day job. What I mean is when you work on your family, you are working for God. That's what you're doing right then. And may I suggest the opposite. When you are working against your family, when you are letting it fall apart, when you are letting it decay, or if you are even actively breaking it down, you are truly working against God. I know as Christians we've made our decision. We've decided to follow and serve Him. Let's live up to that decision in the world and definitely in the home. I appreciate your time and your attention. The world has attacked marriage. It has attacked it with vigor and with zeal and relentlessly. Let our response be equal to the task. Let us vigorously, zealously apply the principles of upholding God's way, God's method, and God's roles within marriage. If there are any here who are not Christians, we give you an opportunity to become one. You know, as time goes on, that's become less and less popular. If we're giving you an opportunity to be a part of a people that the world hates, the world may someday persecute, come and join us. We've got to be offering something if that's an invitation. What we're offering is the forgiveness of sins and eternal life, something the world cannot give and something the world cannot take. We're offering you promises from God. If you're not a Christian, won't you become one? And if you're a Christian and you've fallen away, won't you come back as we stand and as we sing?